suffered numerous disappointments since he had last seen Oppenheimer in the spring of 1943. His efforts to obtain war-related work were stymied in January 1944 when the government refused him a security clearance for a job in the Office of War Information. His FBI file contained unbelievable allegations, said a friend working in OWI. Someone obviously has it in for you. Mystified by this news, Chevalier stayed in New York and found occasional freelance work as a translator and magazine writer. In the spring of 1945, he returned to his teaching post at Berkeley. But soon after the war ended, he was hired by the War Department to serve as a translator at the Nuremberg War Crimes Tribunal. He flew to Europe in October 1945 and did not return to California until May 1946. By then, Berkeley had denied him tenure. Devastated by this blow to his academic career, Chevalier decided to work full-time on a novel he had under contract with the publisher Alfred A. Knopf. On June 26, 1946, about 6 weeks after his first reunion with Oppie, Chevalier was at home working on his novel when two FBI agents knocked on his door. They insisted that he accompany them to their office in downtown San Francisco. On that same summer day, at about the same hour, FBI agents also appeared at George Eltington's home and asked him to accompany them to the FBI field office in Oakland. Chevalier and Eltington were simultaneously questioned for about 6 hours. During the ensuing interrogations, it became clear to both men that the agents wanted to know about the conversations that they had had regarding Oppenheimer in the early winter of 1943. Although each was unaware of the other's interrogation, both men gave similar stories. Eltington acknowledged that sometime late in 1942, when the Soviets were barely containing the Nazi onslaught, Peter Ivanov from the Soviet consulate approached him and asked whether he knew Professor Ernest Lawrence and Robert Oppenheimer and one other individual whom Eltington could not fully recall, but he thought the name might be Alvarez. Eltington replied that he knew only Oppenheimer and not very well. But he volunteered that he had a friend who was close to Oppenheimer. The Russian then asked if his friend might ask Oppenheimer whether he could share information with Soviet scientists. Eltington said he made the inquiry to Chevalier and told him that his Russian friend had assured him that such information would be safely transmitted through his channels which involved photo reproduction. In the event, Eltington confirmed to the FBI that a few days later, Chevalier dropped by my house and told me that there was no chance whatsoever of obtaining any data and Dr. Oppenheimer did not approve. Further, Eltington denied having approached any other individuals. Chevalier confirmed to the FBI the broad outlines of Eltington's statement. But to his surprise, the FBI agents pressed him repeatedly about approaches to three other scientists. Chevalier denied approaching anybody other than Oppenheimer. After nearly 8 hours of interrogation, Chevalier reluctantly agreed to sign an affidavit. I wish to state that to my present knowledge and recollection, I approached no one except Oppenheimer to request information concerning the work of the radiation laboratory. But then he carefully qualified this categorical statement. I may have mentioned the desirability of obtaining this information for Russia with any number of people in passing. I am certain that I never made another specific proposal in this connection. He later wrote in his memoirs that he left wondering how the FBI had heard about his conversations with Eltington and Oppenheimer. Neither could he understand why they believed he had approached three scientists. Sometime later, perhaps in July or August of 1946, Chevalier and Eltington happened to attend the same luncheon in the Berkeley home of a mutual friend. It was the first time they had seen each other since 1943. Chevalier told him about his encounter in June with the FBI. After comparing notes, they realized that they had both been questioned on the same day. How, they wondered, had the FBI gotten wind of their conversation? Several weeks later, Oppenheimer invited the Chevaliers to a cocktail party at Eagle Hill. They came early, as requested, so that the old friends could have a chance to visit before the other guests arrived. According to Chevalier's account in his memoir, when he broached the topic of his recent encounter with the FBI, Opie's face at once darkened.
Let's go outside, Robert said.
Hoke took this as an indication that his friend thought his home was wiretapped. They walked into the back garden on a wooded corner of the property. As they paced, Chevalier gave a detailed account of his interrogation.
Appiah was obviously greatly upset.
Chevalier wrote in 1965. He asked me endless questions. When Chevalier explained that he had been reluctant to tell the FBI about his conversation with Eltinton, Oppenheimer reassured him that it had been the right thing to do.
"I had to report that conversation, you know," Oppenheimer said.
"Yes," Chevalier replied, although he wondered to himself whether it had really been necessary. "But what about those alleged approaches to three scientists and the supposed repeated attempts to get secret information?" In Chevalier's account, Oppenheimer gave no reply to this critical question. As Oppenheimer stood in his Eagle Hill garden, trying to reconstruct what he had told Pash in 1943, he became more and more agitated. Chevalier thought he seemed extremely nervous and tense. Eventually, Kitty called, "Darling, the guests are arriving, and I think you'd better come in now." Oppie replied abruptly, saying that he would come in a minute. But he continued his pacing and had Chevalier repeat his story again. Minutes passed, and Kitty came out a second time, calling out that he really must come now. When Oppie replied curtly, Kitty persisted. "Then, to my utter dismay," Chevalier wrote, "Appia let loose with a flood of foul language, calling Kitty vile names and told her to mind her goddamn business and to get the hell out." Chevalier had never seen his friend behave so intemperately. Even then, he seemed reluctant to end the conversation with Chevalier. Something was obviously bothering him, Chevalier wrote, but he gave no hint as to what it was. Soon after this troubling conversation with Chevalier, on September 5, 1946, agents of the FBI paid a visit to Oppenheimer's Berkeley office. Not to his surprise, they wanted to question him about his 1943 conversation with Chevalier. Gracious as always, he explained that Chevalier had informed him about Eltinton's scheme and that he had rejected it outright. He remembered telling Chevalier that to do such a thing was treason or close to treason. He denied that Chevalier was trying to solicit information on the bomb project. On further questioning, Oppenheimer said that due to the lapse of time since the incident, he was vague in his mind as to the exact words used by him and Chevalier in their conversation, and any present effort on his part to reconstruct their conversation would be pure guesswork, but he did definitely recollect having used either the word treason or treasonous to Chevalier. When the FBI agents pressed him about three other approaches to scientists connected to the Manhattan Project, he told them that this part of the story had been concocted in order to protect the identity of Chevalier. Oppenheimer stated that in previously reporting this matter to MED, Manhattan Engineer District, he tried to protect Chevalier's identity, and in an effort to do so, he concocted a completely fabricated story, which he later described as a complicated cock-and-bull story, which was to the effect that three unidentified associates had been approached on Eltinton's behalf for information. Why did Oppenheimer say such a thing? Why would he admit to lying about what he had said in 1943? An obvious explanation is that this version of the story was the truth. He had panicked when confronted by Pash in 1943 and had embellished his account with three fictional scientists to dramatize its importance and divert attention from himself. Another explanation is that during his garden conversation with Chevalier, he learned that his friend had not approached three other scientists as he had originally thought. After all, Eltinton had mentioned Oppenheimer, Lawrence, and perhaps Alvarez to Chevalier as potential targets, making it entirely plausible that Chevalier had related this to Oppenheimer in their kitchen conversation. Yet another possibility is that he had told some version of the truth in 1943, but now felt compelled to change his story in order to protect both Chevalier and the unnamed scientists. His enemies would insist at the 1954 security clearance hearing that this was the case, but it is the least plausible of all the explanations. He had long ago informed on Chevalier, and Lawrence and Alvarez hardly needed his protection. The only person in need of protection now was Robert Oppenheimer, and admitting to the FBI in 1946 that he had lied to military intelligence in 1943 was not the best way to protect oneself, unless it was the unvarnished truth. But all of these explanations and others would be raised again and challenged 8 years later during Robert's security hearing. The contradictions in these two stories would be devastating.